This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. officials have said the Islamic State terror group's Afghan affiliate was behind Friday's attack in Russia that killed 137 people, but Kremlin officials, including President Vladimir Putin, are accusing Ukraine of involvement. VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us more.
Putin addressed the nation and, without evidence, said the attackers were moving towards Ukraine and that a passage was prepared for them on the Ukrainian side to cross the border. It is a claim refuted by U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, who spoke with ABC News as carried on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter.
No, there is no whatsoever any evidence. And in fact, what we know to be the case is that ISIS-K is actually, by all accounts, responsible for what happened.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russian forces invading his country could have stopped such a deadly attack if not preoccupied by war. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Russia hit western Ukraine with missiles early Sunday, according to Kyiv, in a major airstrike that saw one Russian cruise missile briefly fly into Polish airspace, according to Warsaw. Reuters correspondent Trevor Coral.
Air raid sirens sounded in Kyiv after a wave of Russian missile strikes against Ukraine on Sunday. Residents made their way into subway stations to seek shelter. Kyiv said the airstrike struck critical infrastructure in western Ukraine and that air defenses destroyed about a dozen missiles over the capital. One Russian cruise missile briefly flew into Polish airspace and stayed there for 39 seconds, according to Poland's defense minister. Russia has been pounding Ukraine for days in attacks portrayed by Moscow as revenge for Ukrainian attacks carried out during Russia's presidential election.
That's Reuters' Trevor Coral reporting. This is VOA News. Palestinians who fled an ongoing Israeli raid of Gaza's main hospital have told the Associated Press of mass arrests and forced marches past dead bodies. Israel's military says it has killed more than 170 militants and detained about 480 suspects in the raid on Shifa Hospital that began Monday. Fighting highlights the resilience of Palestinian armed groups in a heavily destroyed part of Gaza, targeted in the war's earliest weeks. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Sunday that only the effective and efficient way to deliver heavy goods to meet Gaza's humanitarian needs is by road, and includes an exponential increase in commercial deliveries.
Palestinians in Gaza desperately need what has been promised, a flood of aid. Not trickles, not drops. Some progress has been made, but much more needs to be done.
Speaking after meeting Egypt's president and foreign minister, Guterres also warned of the impact the war in Gaza was having around the globe. He's visiting Egypt and Jordan as part of an annual Ramadan solidarity tour to Muslim countries. He traveled Saturday to Egypt's border with Gaza, where he called the backlog of aid destined for the Palestinian territory a moral outrage. Officials in Nigeria say 137 school children have been rescued more than 2 weeks after they were seized in the northwestern state of Kaduna and marched into the forest. School authorities had told the state government that a total of 287 students were kidnapped during the school attack March 7th. Such varying reports are common in Nigeria, kidnapping crisis sometimes because of inadequate record keeping or because some hostages escape shortly after their abduction. At least 1,400 students have been kidnapped from Nigerian schools since 2014, when Boko Haram militants kidnapped hundreds of schoolgirls. Recent abductions have been concentrated in the country's northwestern and central regions, where dozens of armed groups targeted villagers and travelers for ransom. Space weather forecasters in the U.S. have issued a global geomagnetic storm watch through Monday. VOA's Joe Ramsey tells us more.
A plasma burst from a solar flare could interfere with radio transmissions across Earth. It may also make for great aurora viewing. The National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's Space Weather Prediction Center says there's no reason for concern. Jonathan Lash, a forecaster at the State of Colorado-based center, says the storm could interrupt high-frequency radio transmissions, such as by aircraft trying to communicate with distant traffic controllers. Most commercial aircraft can use satellite transmissions as a backup. Every 11 years, the sun's magnetic field flips, meeting its north and south pole switch positions.
That's VOA's Joe Ramsey reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Monday, March 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway as Senegalese voters finally cast their ballots in the delayed presidential elections.
In all the 23 districts where I'm declaring a state of disaster today, the most urgent need is food because of the large number of people at risk of hunger.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera declares a state of disaster in 23 districts that are in dire need of food aid.
Of course, the threats are there. I've gotten to know them through different channels. I'm getting to know that certain powerful people in parliament contacted the Uganda Communications Commission asking for my details, communications, where I moved to.
And a Ugandan activist faces threats from after what many describe as a successful online campaign against corruption and misuse of public funds. Those stories plus Samson Omalley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway as Senegalese were finally able to cast their ballots Sunday for various candidates in the presidential elections, this after months of political tension and uncertainty. The election comes after outgoing President Macky Sall's earlier attempt to delay the vote raised fears he may try to hold on to power. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo is in Dakar and has this report.
By Sunday evening, most polling stations around Senegal had closed, and the much-anticipated presidential election seemed to have gone smoothly, according to most reports. Thousands of Senegalese showed up all over the country and waited patiently to cast their votes at various polling stations. Abdoulaye Sylla, president of the National Electoral Commission, said turnout was high. Observers from many organizations were present, including from the European Union, which sent 100 observers all over the country. In a news conference Sunday, Malin Bjork, who heads the EU group that arrived in January, gave an early assessment. She says, this morning our observers were present in 40 polling stations. Our summary as of now is that the poll took place in a calm environment and was well organized. Earlier, VOA spoke to Jules Roland Pascal Diatta, a voter who arrived 2.5 hours before the polls officially opened in the Grand Yoff neighborhood of the capital, Dakar.
C'est une élection qui est très importante pour moi et pour tous les Sénégalais.
He says, this is a very important election for me and everyone here. I like my candidate because he has a solid and well-defined program that I think could save Senegal. Diatta says he voted for the coalition led by Bassirou Diomaye Faye. Faye, a former tax inspector, is backed by Ousmane Sonko, who was seen as the key challenger to outgoing President Macky Sall. Sonko was barred from running in this year's elections over a previous defamation conviction. Both Faye and Sonko were recently released from prison. Another voter, Ahmadou Khadim Lowe, hopes for job creation to be the number one goal for the next leader.
75% de la population du Sénégal est jeune.
Lowe says 70% of the Senegalese population is young, and many of them have diplomas but can't find jobs. About 17 candidates were vying for the top job, including former Prime Minister Amadou Ba, who's endorsed by Sall. Seynabou Faye told us she wants a continuation of the policies of the current government. Telling us, I just love Macky Sall. He's done more work than any other president before him. He's built bridges, the bus rapid transit system, stadiums, roads. I would like to see Amadou Ba win so he can work on some of Sall's unfinished projects. It's not clear yet how soon official results will be available, but political analyst Babacar Ndiaye explains the next step.
On peut avoir un scénario où...
Ndiaye says we can have a scenario where one candidate wins in the first round. The person needs 51%. But if that's not reached, there will be a second round, which could take place in 2 to 3 weeks. Djibril Ngeng, executive director of PACT, a civil society group working for election transparency, says a second round of voting could raise new problems for the country. He says President Sall recently said that if a candidate wins, he'll make sure a transition takes place. If not, he's leaving on April 2nd. Ngeng says in the event of a second round, results won't be known by the time Sall has pledged to step aside. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera has declared a state of disaster in 23 out of the country's 28 districts affected by El Nino conditions, where an estimated 2 million people are in dire need of food aid. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi has been experiencing recurrent dry spells for several weeks since November. In a televised national address Saturday night, Chakwera said this has affected over 700,000 hectares of maize, representing 44.3% of the national crop area.
In all the 23 districts where I'm declaring a state of disaster today, the most urgent need is food because of the large number of people at risk of hunger.
Chakwera said a preliminary report by the Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee shows that a drought is affecting nearly 2 million farming households and their crops, including maize, rice, beans, cowpeas, and groundnuts. President Chakwera therefore appealed for urgent assistance of about $200 million in food aid from UN agencies, the World Bank, and other relief groups to purchase an estimated 600,000 metric tons of maize required for the humanitarian response.
All those who have any resources in cash or kind to spare to avail those resources as donations to the presidential initiative to stop hunger, which will be coordinated by my office through the Department of Disaster Management Affairs.
The appeal comes 2 weeks after Chakwera visited some of the districts affected by the impact of El Nino weather conditions in central and northern Malawi. This is the fourth time for Chakwera to declare a national disaster since he came into office in 2020. The most recent one was last year when Cyclone Freddy, which also hit Mozambique and Madagascar, displaced thousands of people in southern Malawi and washed away their crops. However, some commentators say Chakwera could have made the appeal sooner, just as neighboring Zambia did in February, when the country had gone without rain for 5 weeks. Members of the Committee for Agriculture in the Malawi Parliament have on several occasions requested the government to declare a state of disaster for the prevailing hunger situation facing 4.4 million Malawians. But Chakwera said this is not time for a blame game.
Fellow Malawians, there is no one in this country who is at fault for any of the disasters that keep coming against us. But if we stand united and put away the politics of pettiness and negativity to confront this latest disaster, there is no one in this country who should die because of hunger.
Chakwera said the government has introduced Mega Farms initiative to help shield Malawians from the impact of disasters which affect the country's food basket. For VOA Africa, I am Lameck Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
Zambia's information minister says President Hakainde Hichilema's government will continue to respect the freedoms of speech and press because they are entrenched in the constitution. This after some opposition politicians accused the government of planning to introduce amendments to the Information Broadcasting Authority Act. The changes would punish perceived political opponents who use social media to disseminate their views. Information Minister Cornelius Mwetwa tells VOA's James Barty, the proposed amendments are about regulating the licensing of broadcasting via the Internet. He says the changes are being suggested by ordinary citizens and not the government.
First of all, the amendments envisaged in the Independent Broadcasting Authority Act have got nothing to do with constitutionally guaranteed freedoms of expression and speech, because such freedoms are entrenched in the Constitution, meaning they can only be amended via a referendum. Therefore, it has everything to do with individuals and entities and companies that have made representations to the Independent Broadcasting Authority, which is an agency of government which actually regulates the operations of broadcasting media houses to ensure that the content they publish to the citizens is not obnoxious, that it is content fit for consumption by society.
Minister, the opponents of these proposed changes say that they are intended to target social media broadcasters who are critical of the government and opposition people who are also critical ahead of the elections in 2026.
First of all, those kind of assertions by the opposition are unsubstantiable and highly misplaced, because this proposal is not targeting social media and utilization of social media in Zambia, because social media utilization is already regulated by the Cyber Security and Cyber Crimes Act of 2021. Therefore, this current proposal is not talking about social media. It is talking about licensing broadcasting using internet. That is one. Number two, that this is a proposal at the stage of the technical working group, which was a platform set to receive views from various stakeholders who were speaking to the amendment of the Independent Broadcasting Authority Act, which has so many issues that people are speaking to, except that this single one has been highlighted as if it is a proposal in isolation. No, it is a proposal that was given to the technical working group, receiving contributions or views from various stakeholders, the public at large, who, after receiving various such contributions, came up with what is called a layman's draft, which is, as it is, just a bunch of recommendations to the ministry, after which the Ministry of Information will, upon consideration of the same, relay to the Ministry of Justice. The Ministry of Justice are supposed to come up with a professional draft. After that draft has been done, the Ministry of Justice will be able to relay it back to the stakeholders as to whether their aspirations, views have been taken on board before a draft bill is referred to Parliament, who shall refer such a bill to a specialized committee of Parliament or an ad hoc select committee of Parliament, which shall in turn re-invite all stakeholders to come and speak to the bill, justify the proposals that are in the bill before recommendations are made to the whole House of Parliament. The people are the ones who have come up with that proposal.
Cornelius Mwetwa is Zambia's information minister. He was speaking from the capital, Lusaka, with my colleague, James Barty. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Monday, March 25th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And see to come on our program, Samson Omale Sports. An online protest movement is being credited for exposing corruption in Uganda. Among others, posts on the Uganda National Assembly purport to reveal details about abuse of public resources, nepotism in staff recruitment, and even collusion between civil servants and lawmakers on oversight committees. The online protest movement, which has generated a national conversation, has been hailed by anti-corruption activists for its ability to name and shame specific individuals before an attentive audience. Dr. Jimmy Spire Sentongo, a Ugandan professor, columnist, author, and editorial cartoonist, is leading the exhibition. He tells me that although he is worried about his safety after receiving threats, the campaign has been largely successful in creating awareness.
Yeah, I think it depends on what one looks at, but it has been largely successful in terms of creating awareness, making people alert, citizens alert about things around them, about their rights, about how to demand for accountability, because increasingly I'm seeing that from when we started with the portfolio exhibition, there were fewer people who were active, but now it's the people demanding for the exhibitions, and their participation is quite widespread. They don't even have to first call on me. At times, they just immediately start exposing, bringing out issues that they think need to be talked about, or where they need accountability from the different institutions. So I think it has been largely successful in that regard. But also, we've seen on a number of occasions, different institutions have come out at least to explain with the roads. Kampala Capital City Authority came up, Parliament discussed it, even the same thing was seen with the health sector. Parliament, they have been a bit adamant, but you clearly see that the debate is out there in the public, different media houses are discussing it now, even those that have been quiet, where you traditionally have expected that it's the media houses that would have broken these stories, but instead now it's us to break the stories, and then media houses come in to discuss and follow up, maybe get more evidence, at times follow up on the clues that we have brought up, that we have unearthed. So I think in terms of initiating debates, in terms of sensitizing the public to understand their power and that they can put their leaders to account, that is where the exhibitions have been successful.
Yeah, indeed, it has garnered a lot of awareness locally and even internationally. But then we are hearing of allegations of threats to you. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course, the threats are there. I've gotten to know them through different channels, getting to know that Parliament, certain powerful people in Parliament contacted the Uganda Communications Commission asking for my details, communications, where I moved to, how I moved, which clearly shows that it's beyond them. Maybe you would have suspected that they want to know who I deal with, because some have come up with allegations that this is supported by the gay community, more of excuses, it's supported by different kinds of groups. So you would have expected that maybe that's what they want to find out, but that wouldn't require knowing my movements, and then information comes out around the same time from security circles that they had wanted to kidnap me and some of the others. So the threats are there, and they seem to be more prominent or more closer in this exhibition than they were before. Even during the health exhibitions, I had such threats. But in this particular one, they have been quite much more pronounced.
Are you concerned about your safety? How safe are you?
Because it could be partly to scare off, but you cannot take it for granted, because we've seen things happen to other people. We've seen the case of Kakwenza, who was tortured very badly. We've seen other people who have been kidnapped in these vans that have come to be known as drones. So you cannot really take it for granted, even if it's just a mere threat. You have to take precautions. I'm taking precautions. I know it could be just a threat, but given that in some instances, as the one I've mentioned, the Uganda Communications Commission, I have it on authority that they have asked for these files, for information about me to be provided. So I know that this is not just a threat. If it had been a threat, maybe they would go through someone to present it to me as an alert, but this is not just that.
Dr. Jimmy Spire Sentongo, a Ugandan professor, columnist, author, and editorial cartoonist, he spoke with me by phone from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Obali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport in Accra, Ghana, where the 13th edition of the Africa Games ended on Saturday after 20 days of competition. Egypt won the All Africa Games after coming tops on the ranking table with a total of 189 medals, consisting of 101 gold, 46 silver and 42 bronze. Team Nigeria came second behind Egypt, winning 120 medals in total, comprising of 47 gold, 33 silver and 40 bronze medals, won across 25 sports. South Africa took the third place after amassing a total of 106 medals, which include 32 gold, 32 silver and 42 bronze medals. Of the 54 countries in Africa, 53 were in attendance, with only Cape Verde absent from the 13th edition of the Games, which kicked off on March the 8th, 2024. Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo at the closing ceremony praised his countrymen for organizing one of the best African Games in recent times.
May the memories of these games inspire us to work together towards a brighter, more prosperous, and more united future for Africa and her peoples.
In athletics, former Grand Prix champion South African Glen Rose Xaba dug deep in the closing stages of the race on Sunday, producing a late kick to stun her opposition as she stormed to victory at the opening leg of the Grand Prix 10-kilometer series in Cape Town. After taking the lead around the halfway mark, Xaba slipped off the pace with less than 2 kilometers remaining, with Ethiopian teenager Dinia Kidir Abaraya opening a gap, but the South African star clawed her way back to move clear again, crossing the finishing line in 32 minutes, 17 seconds. Abaraya held on to finish second in 32 minutes, 24 seconds, with compatriot Getnish Agafor taking third place in 33 minutes, 02 seconds. And now to netball, where coach Precious Mtembo says she's pleased with how the baby Proteas of South Africa performed in the Netball World Youth Cup 2025 Africa Regional Qualifiers. South Africa came tops with a 100% winning record in the tournament. They defeated the Young Queens of Malawi in the final of the tournament, beating them 45-26 to take the gold medal. Both sides will represent the continent at next year's World Cup set for Gibraltar. The Baby Proteas finished in 7th place in the last edition, which was held in Botswana in 2017. Mtembo plans to strengthen the team ahead of the tournament next year.
But yeah, I'm honored, I'm excited, and yeah, it's a group of girls that I'm willing to take up and hopefully pass them on to the Proteas, and I'm thankful to Netball South Africa for, you know, saying, hey, are you ready for this? Take it. Obviously, they've seen my work that I've done, and they trust the process that I'm already taking forward with the girls.
And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, March 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very wonderful week.
Firstborn daughters face pressures and often seen as the third parent to their young siblings. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we hear testimonies as well as experts' take on how firstborn daughters handle the responsibilities of being a caretaker and a house helper in a family, even from a very young age. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices. Join the conversation on Wednesdays and